part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time. I'm here doing part. I'm here doing part-time.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How's everything going?
Yeah, good. There's currently a heat wave in London, so...
I'm sorry. I live in Los Angeles. There's always a heat wave here, so...
I know, but you guys have lots of lovely aircon, whereas in London, it's like being...
yeah, that's right.
Everywhere you go is miserable.
I'm sorry to hear it. Well, I appreciate you joining me. Time is it there right now?
It's 6 o'clock at night.
Oh, okay. So cooling down in the evening at all, or just still miserably hot?
Still miserably. Yeah, we live in like an old Victorian flat, so
it's
like wood and plaster, and you know, so when it gets hot, it keeps the heat for.
Sorry.
No. Silly.
Yeah, climate change.
You guys with your lovely aircon, though. That's nice.
Yeah. We've definitely got air conditioning. At least in my place, we've got air conditioning. And then you go to work, go into the office sometimes, and it's like frigid, and you step outside and it's blazing hot. So it's Well, I'm sorry about your weather, but I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me in this. In the heat. Let's just start off by saying your name is Rory Collins, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yes, sir. Well, my name is Christian Horn. This is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. I appreciate you taking the time to sit with me. I always like to start off, if somebody's got a Kickstarter or something, a crowdfunding thing happening, to let people know, like, you're doing a Kickstarter soon, correct? I just went to Kickstarter and looked it up.
This coming Thursday.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so it's 8 p.m. PST, so you're 8 hours behind, so that'll be like, what, 10? And I should be able to do this math.
If you're eight hours behind,
so it'd be 12, it'd be midday for you.
Yeah, midday, about noon. So noon on Thursday, at least West Coast time. It'll probably be like 4 p.m. East Coast, 3-4, something like that, East Coast time, in the U.S. But, you know, we're not the center of the universe in the U.S. So if you're out there listening anywhere in the world, and I know people around the world sometimes listen to this podcast, definitely check out, it's called ARCS Proximan, right? Proximan?
That's the one.
Okay. And I was able to read the stuff that was sent to me, the first volume of ARCS, and then looks like the fourth issue. I will tell you right now that this book is like the craziest, most awesome, compelling like read that I want to say I've read in a long time, or maybe ever read. Like, I dived into it. And I was just like, I mean, this is the most unique thing I've read. I can't remember when I read something and I was just like, this is so different. Like, it's just so, and then also made me think, like, I don't know if I'm smart enough to be reading this book. Like, it's just so good. Can you tell me or tell people listening what ARCS is about?
Yeah, it's about a scientific theory called direct panspermia that's been around for thousands of years, since Anaxagoras in the 5th century. It's like really old theory, which is basically directed panspermia just basically means directed all seed. You basically send seeds out into the universe and then they pollinate and then you boot the species up. And for a long time, the science has been pretty emphatic about how completely impossible extrasolar travel is, basically leaving our solar system. So if we ever attempt to leave and go to our nearest stars, the way we'd have to do it is we'd have to compress our genomes and our our essence, as it were, into a very small life form like a bacteria, and then you would fire that bacteria in a tiny little canister the size of a pencil at our planet and hope that that planet has liquid water and moons. And then if that cancer reaches there, that that kind of hero organism, as it were, will create algae to oxygenate the planet. And then after several thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years, it will start to boot human life there. And then the story arcs is about these two, this couple called Joseph and Lilith, who get booted up by bacteria. And they quickly realize that the planet that they've terraformed, the process has worked so well that the planet's become a bomb. They have to deal with that. Spoilers.
It is.
But then it's good science fiction, so everything goes wrong. And then just when it can't get any go any more wrong, they find something mysterious.
I mean, I have to say, like, this was the sort of thing, like, I was reading it and I was like, oh, this is really interesting. And I kept reading, and I was going into it, and I was just like, I was astounded by how much credit, like, you give your audience, like the reader, you know what I mean? Because I was reading it and I was like, okay, this is different. Whereas, because I mean, it starts off kind of like with the Lilith myth. And then once you sort of get past that, which, you know, I knew a bit about, I grew up Catholic and, you know, surrounded by all those kind of like myths and stories and stuff like that. You know, and Lilith was something that I heard about later, you know, growing up. I didn't know about that via that Adam and Eve thing. But like, as you go into it and then the story kind of kicks in, like, I was just like, okay, I don't know if I understand everything. I mean, I get what they're saying, but the terminology and the words, like the phrasing that your the dialogue that your characters use is seems so scientific and dead on with how like scientists would speak. And I was like, wow, you're giving the reader a lot of credit to be able to like go through this and figure out the terminology that they're using and stuff. And I was just so respect that, because at the same time, it didn't turn me off. Like, it kept me going and like wanting to be like, what are they talking about? Like, what? Well, I'm not sure I understand the terminology. I get what they're saying. And can you speak to me about that? Like, having faith in your reader, because, you know, so many people think that the audience has to be spoon fed, right? Or like, you know, and you don't do that in this at all.
No, I don't. Well, thank you. One, Christian, thank you for saying that. It's very nice to hear. Making comics books is quite a lonely job, so you don't often get to have someone say something nice. So thank you.
Sure.
Basically, I like listening to people talk, and especially if I don't know what they're talking about. If I hear someone talking about badminton and they love talking about badminton, I'm just like fascinated, because they are going to use words and phrases. Anything, you know, doctors, cooks. If I listen to two cooks talk to each other about cooking, I'm just amazed.
Yeah.
So I kind of, when I came to this, I wanted to write the story as if these were two people who, because normally there's that whole kind of cliche thing where someone goes, speak to me in English. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's always that bit in films. And I that's kind of a little kind of pet peeve of mine. So I wanted to make something where you're seeing two people talk about a process. You don't know what the hell's going on, but you just kind of get the gist of what they're saying. Now, everything they're saying obviously makes perfect sense in the case of the story, but I wanted there to be vernacular in there that you wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
So it's real, because I think that the idea is so strange and so kind of counterintuitive to us as human beings that the only way I felt like I could normalize it would be if you had two people talking about it as if it was reality.
Yeah.
It was kind of to be honest, there have been times since I've written a few of the comics that I wish I had dumbed it down and removed a little bit of the science, because some people have said it's a bit full on. But also, it's my taste. I kind of like, I love, you know, that's the stuff I love. You know, I like to just be taken. I like to watch people who know what they're doing talk about. So I kind of, that's where that came from.
I was reading this and I was just like, how smart is this person? Like, I was just like this. Are you involved in science? Have you been involved in science? Like, how much, what is your background? You're an artist, correct?
I'm an artist. Yeah. I'm a storyboard artist in film and TV. I've always been like, kind of had like a hobbyist kind of you know, I love science books. You know, this kind of story came about from reading Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking.
Because
that book, he basically, when he starts talking about relativity and all the weird kind of paradoxes that happen when you can travel at the speed of light, about how time stops and everything else, you start to realize just how kind of, so that kind of, because I love science fiction and I love spaceships and, you know, that's what I grew up with. So when I read that book, I was really sad. I was like, oh, I'm kind of really disappointed that we can't, because I think that's kind of part of our kind of collective human ego, is that one day we'll leave and we'll colonize or system. So it's part of our popular imagination and everything else. So when I read that book and realized it wasn't possible, I was quite depressed. And then in the process of researching, I wasn't even researching, it was just me reading other books, I realized that it was an idea that they've all started to actually now really start take quite seriously. Like Stephen Hawking, just before he died, kind of pioneered this thing called Breakthrough Starshot, which is about sending a camera to Proxima Centauri, which is the planet that's featured in Proximan, the Kickstarter that's coming out on Thursday.
Okay.
So it's becoming part of scientific discussions at the moment, but there's nothing about it in popular culture. So I, being a, you know, a charlatan, I was like, oh, no one's made anything about this. Maybe I can.
Yeah.
So I just researched it for a long time, for like nearly 10 years, wrote lots of drafts. It was originally a script. TV scripts and a film script, and then went through a few iterations, and then during COVID a friend of mine suggested about turning it into a book, and I was like, well, I can't make a book, but I can make a graphic novel. So I started then, and that was 5 books ago. So
wow. Have to say, I mean I'm a fan of science fiction, I'm a fan of comic books, obviously I have a podcast called Part-Time Fanboy, and you know, in my spare time I draw, and you know, I work in graphics in my career and stuff like that, like Photoshop, all that stuff. But I mean, it's a big leap for me to be able to, like, I, like what you did was so, like, I honestly thought I was reading something that a scientist wrote. Like, I was just like, I was like, because I did, you know, I mean, I don't know, maybe a scientist would read this and be like, no, you know what I mean? Somebody smarter than me. But I'm just, you know, I'm just saying, like, I was reading it and I was just like, the concepts and the way that the characters talk to one another and the way that they talk about like what's happening to them and what's happening to the planet. It was really great, because like for me, I mean, I don't know that I'm a bit like you, but I'm definitely like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like I need to figure this out. Like, what is happening? And the more that the things happened in the story and the more that they spoke about it, the more I was like, okay, what are they talking about? Wait, okay, they're doing this. And they imprinted or burned like their personalities. Yeah. I can't remember. Like, I was just like, how is this going along? And I was just, I was just like, somebody smarter than me wrote this, because it's a big like jump for me to be like, okay, like you were a fan of something to the point where you can write dialogue like you've done. And then also have, at the end of the first book, you have a breakdown about like how everything works. And I read that stuff and I was like, wow, this is incredible. So, I mean, how much of a deep dive did you do? Like, your brain must be pretty big, man, because I was just like, wow.
I'm not much fun to be around.
Well, I would dispute that. We're having a nice little conversation.
You have to hold a lot in the cache. You know, you have to kind of remember a lot of stuff. But I mean, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants. I mean, I was inspired by one of the great American synthetic biologists, a guy called Craig Venter, who was the guy that sequenced the genome. Uh-huh. And, you know, he was a huge inspiration. I read his autobiography. I read other scientists' autobiographies. I read books about synthetic biology, about quantum biology. And I'm just a hobbyist. And the way I remember this all is I just have this absolutely insane Google Doc that looks like a serial killer's notebook that's writing paragraphs and like terminology. So like the burn in and the boot up and all the language that's in the comic, that's from synthetic biology, because they, when they talk about creating life in the lab, they use computer language. So that burn in is like, you know, back in the day when you would burn CDs,
yeah,
was all kind of like boot up is how they talk about making life in a lab. So I basically just, you know, with the old writer's line, you know, still from one person it's plagiarism, still from many people it's research. It's just that. I've just taken from many, many great great scientists and writers about the topic and just made unbelievable notes. And then, yeah, just try to write it down. I can't really keep it all in my head. Normally when I reread the comic, which is quite difficult to do, I'll always be like, Jesus, where did that come from? I can't even remember writing that. So it's just normal, just note taking.
Can you talk to me about, because I mean, you have a history of storyboarding, working in film and stuff like that, but I'm not sure. I mean, obviously you've worked with scripts. You've probably seen a lot of scripts, but like for me, the fascinating thing was really doing a great job in constructing the dialogue and the way that the two lead characters who are, I'm going to just use the word term spawned on this planet. Discuss with one another, because it's obvious to me that like the female of the pair is more the scientific one, right? And the male, I don't know, he's a scientist too, but it's more he seems to be more like, I don't know if the correct term is backup, but constructing the dialogue between the two of them, how difficult was that for you? Because it seems to me it's like it all makes sense, but the terminology is in there and stuff like that. Like, how much schooling did you have to do for yourself as far as like building dialogue, making it sound like two people were talking to each other? Because that was the thing that impressed me. It didn't read like a textbook, right? It didn't read like A plus B equals C and blah, blah, blah. Like, it was very compelling because it seemed the way that two people would talk to each other. And then if I was in the room, I'd be like, what are these people talking about? Okay, I really got to pay attention. I got to keep up. You know what I'm saying? It would be like maybe you and me talking about like Jack Kirby or something. You know what I mean? And somebody who's not into comics being like, what? Like, you know what I'm saying? So how did you go about like constructing that dialogue, especially maybe in my brain thinking like maybe script writing is not your first, you know, jump into? Like, can you talk to that a little bit? Am I making any kind of sense or am I just babbling?
No, perfect. Like, so I wrote it as originally it was a TV and then a film script.
Sure.
And I'd written it in a kind of conversational kind of style. I don't like it when dialogue's too on the nose and when people are talking to each other in really kind of pithy kind of. And when I came to do the comic book, I quickly realized that wasn't going to work because one, the comic would be like 900 pages long. And I had to be more concise. And also in comics, you kind of really have to be on the nose because there's less information. Like when you watch a film, you're getting 25 frames a second and you're getting so much information from it. Whereas with a comic, you get like a frame. So you have the dialogue. So I sort of adapted the script to the comic, and like they are the same story, but they're kind of unrecognizable from each other at this point because they've changed so much. But so there was definitely a lot of like massaging it when I was like kind of, and I also found one of the weird things about it was I would write it on the page, but then when I would put it onto the, you know, I would compose it in a text bubble, it wouldn't look right. And I'd be like, that doesn't make sense. So then I'd have to, so sometimes I really would write it as I was storyboarding it. I would like rewrite it until I had no more time, and then I had to finish it and then kind of go back and rewrite it. And to be honest, whenever I reread it now, I feel like I need to rewrite the whole thing again.
Oh, wow. That's dangerous. Don't pull a George Lucas.
You've got to move on though, I think. So I kind of sort of just been like, you know, it's done now.
Yeah.
So, but it's hard. It's really hard. I'm not, you know, when you see like really great books, comic books.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's because that artist or writer, they made that comic for themselves. They weren't really doing it because they got, you know. So I'm kind of doing this for myself. I mean, if I was the only person that read it, then that would be sad. But also, I'd be like, okay, because that's kind of, I just want to.
Yeah.
Sort of like.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you know, we'll digress a little bit towards the end there, but yeah. It's hard, isn't it? Anything, well, any, you know, it's hard to do good stuff. You've just got to keep doing it, and then and then hope that people like it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I noticed is, like, you drew the first issue, right? Like, you did the first issue. And, like, the whole thing looks, like, really beautiful, I must say. I mean, there's a lot of effects and a lot of, like, you know, are you working primarily digitally in it or with it or...
Yeah. So I'm like a kind of a bit of a jack of all trades. I started off as a storyboard artist, but in more recent years, I've sort of become more of like a motion graphics person.
Gotcha.
So one of the things that put me off doing a comic book was drawing likenesses, like across like pages, because, you know, drawing a likeness once is fine, but if you've got to draw a likeness from a million different angles, I can do that because I'm an artist, but it just takes me a long time. It's like time consuming getting... drawing a face from a million different angles, let alone two faces.
Yeah.
So one of the impediments to me doing a comic book was that. So one of my friends who does a lot of 3D stuff said, well, I'll just make you a 3D marionette. We'll design the characters in ZBrush, and then we can sort of pose them like marionettes, and you sort of use them as your... So then that way you can get the likeness of the characters. So that was kind of one of the... That sort of... That allowed me to then be able to sort of contemplate making it into a like a 56 page, the first issue anyway, it's a 56 page. But then the second, third, and fourth, and the fifth and the sixth will be all done by this amazing artist called Andrew Morris, who can draw. So
well, you can draw too. I mean, I was just going through the first issue. Is it all 3D? Is it like one of the things I want to impart to anyone listening to me is like that this is very like the art is like really great. It's different than anything that I've seen before in a comic, but it also kind of harkens back to like stuff like heavy metal and a lot of like European, obviously you're in the UK, you know, which is not necessarily Europe, but you know, part of your, you know, but still it is in that tradition, you know what I'm saying? So it looks great, but it also looks like very different. And as somebody who uses Photoshop a lot and Clip Studio Paint and Illustrator and stuff, like I was looking at it and I was just trying to figure out like, what are they doing? Like, did they just paint in Photoshop? Is it all 3D rendered? Like, are all the panels, like, how did you go through this? Cause I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah. Oh, it's all start. So yeah. So basically not all of it, but like large sections of it. So like the cradle and then the big structure they find.
Yeah.
And the beach in issue one, I just kind of mocked up a beach scene, and I got my talented friends to mock me up a beach scene. And then I would sort of find the frames I wanted. And then I would sort of use that as the basis for the background. So then you'd sort of like draw into it and then sort of, you know, add elements to it and photo bash it and work into it and then sort of get something that sort of looks like what I had in my head.
Okay.
And then Andrew Morris, who's the artist in 2, 3, and 4, he went one further and he put the 3D elements into a computer games engine. Yeah. And then we ran around this little kind of 3D set that he built.
Yeah.
And we'd find our frames and we'd be like, there's that angle, that's angle. And then we take it into Photoshop and we paint on top of it and we, you know, massage it, add it all. And so that's kind of where, I mean, it's a lot of work. I'm not going to pretend from a workflow point of view that it's the optimal way to work because it's time consuming. And it's, but the great thing about it is once you've got your backgrounds sorted, you can, and because the story is actually quite contained, it already happens in a little area. It's not like a science fiction story that like takes place on 10 different planets and it all literally happens in a forest. So it's just moving the cameras around and it's great. It looks great. And once it's all done, it works great. It's time consuming though. And
I can imagine. Cause I'm looking at all the pages, there's like tons of details. There's lots of like flares and lights and like there's rendering and stuff. And as somebody who works in this sort of stuff, I was just like, this looks like a lot. Like, it was just so well done. Like, you know what I mean? I was just like, it's so, I'm impressed is what I'm saying. It was, how long did it take for you to get your first issue done? Like illustrate the first issue.
It took about 9 months, I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, but that's because I still am. I mean, I was inexperienced. I didn't know what I was doing. So I was sort of doing everything up. you know, I think I, on some of those pages, I think I probably started from scratch multiple times. So like, you know, you do something and it not quite work, and, you know, because that's one of the things I think people don't appreciate with artists, is that sometimes even if you've got a bit of you know, bit of experience and a bit of talent, you can still draw something and it not look very good, and then you're like, okay, this is, and then you sort of have to start again. So yeah, yeah. So it was a lot of, a lot of R&D.
I would imagine. Well, the other thing I wanted to mention, I mean, we mentioned heavy metal kind of a little while ago. The other thing is, like, and I don't want to make too much of a big deal out of it, but both the characters are basically like nude in the beginning of like the first three issues. And I was like, that's a lot of faith too, to have in like your audience too, that maybe certain people may not, maybe like, oh my, like what is, I can't be reading this or this sort of thing. Yeah. But at the same time, it's not like overtly sexual or anything like that. You're basically kind of telling the story of Adam and Eve, but through a sci-fi lens, or Adam and Lilith, or, you know, through a different lens. And, you know, part of that is like the Garden of Eden and them being naked and stuff like that. And there's no, like, for me, there's no shyness about it. And it's very direct. And you also don't make it, like, I don't want to make it sound like that the art is bad, because it's not bad, but it's like, you don't make it seem like, it's down and dirty, right? They're in the mud. Yeah. They're dealing with their environment and stuff like that. And can you speak to me about that? Like the need to, you know, just have them be like that in the beginning, because like, as I was reading it, I was just like, oh wow. Like for three issues, I was like, good for you. Like, you know, there's a part of me that's like, good for you. But there's a part of me that's like, it seems very courageous to me. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Stupid.
No, I don't think it's stupid at all.
No, I mean that, because I just wanted it to be an Adam and Eve story. So I wanted them to be naked. Now I'm a prude.
Okay.
I don't like nudity. I'm not kinky. I just basically, I wanted it to be Adam and Eve.
So, like you
very kindly said, that it's not sexual. It's not. It's kind of quite muddy and kind of miserable and not particularly. So there's like one or two moments that are a tiny bit sexy, but that's in the context of the story. So that was the decision. But one of the things I didn't realize when I started was, especially Kickstarters, and I'm not trying to cast aspersions, but it's quite smutty.
Yeah.
There's a lot of smutty comics out there. So I didn't quite realize that when I started. So one of the things I found quite difficult when we started to go into Comic Cons in the UK is that I was like, oh God, people think that this is a kinky comic.
I see.
And I was like, all I had to do was just go back and just have them have some kind of high, you know, sci-fi shawl on or something, you know, something. I mean, there's a reason for the nudity in the first issue, because there's like a reveal. But and I was like, oh God, I wish I hadn't done that, because I just didn't realize how smutty it all is. You know, I was just like, people.
Oh, so you mean by like association with Kickstarter in a way?
Yeah.
Like that there's so much. Yeah.
People would just dismiss it as being a, you know, a sexy comic. So So I did have a few like minor nervous breakdowns about that when
I'm really sorry to hear that, because I mean that was the thing that I was when I did was
it. Now that I'm past it and they've got clothes on and it's sort of in the
I mean by sort of the, by the third issue they do, but I mean that's the thing, is like I was just reading it and just being like, wow, this is, I mean, it's cool in its own way, right? Like, because I mean, this is the way you would be, right? And it's very, to me, it felt unapologetic about it. And I was like, because I mean, for people not listening, and if we haven't described it enough, I mean, this is sort of like the Adam and Eve kind of like Lilith story through like a sci-fi lens, but kind of like what it is like people are sort of, there's two people on the planet, right, that are spawned through technology, like microbiological, you know, you would know the word better than I do. Microbiology. And you know, they're spawned fully formed and they're naked. Like that's the way you would be. And it just worked really well. Like as soon as, like at first I realized and I'm like, oh, okay. Like this is a thing. And it kept going on. And you get past it, right? Like you, because the story is so good and it's so, and the way that they talk to each other, like really, like I can't express enough, like this has to be like one of the favorite things that I've read in a while, because it made me feel smarter in a way. And it made me kind of want to keep reading it. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I can't express that enough, where I was like, I sat down and, you know, I interview like a lot of creators and a lot of comic artists and stuff like that. And I appreciate everyone coming to me, and everyone's projects are great and stuff like that. But it's not every time that I will pick up something and be like, oh, where's this going? I want to keep going. Like, I want to keep knowing what's going on. And also the kind of like, the awful sort of, because that's the thing, right? Like, we're used to like Star Trek and, you know, people landing on a planet and everything's like hunky dory, and we all have like this is very raw, and like the characters are in the shit from the beginning. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's not clean. It's not kind. It's not like the environment that they are put in is not Earth. You know, I mean, it's kind of Earth. So like, I found it all to be fascinating. And at this point I'm just rambling, but like, I think it works. Like, I want to let people know like that it works in this book. Like, yes, there is a bit of nudity in it, but it's not salacious, and it works for the story.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was just, 100%. That's lovely to hear. Thank you.
Yeah.
So much. That's honestly, that's lovely. And the nudity is, it obviously Adam and Eve. So it is that, but then there is actually a reason for the nudity, like later on in the story. It's kind of like part of the mystery they solve, is that they shouldn't, obviously, you know, if you read the story, they start off in a place where they shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. And then the nudity is kind of part of the, you know, it's one of the clues that they kind of, So it's not whimsy. It's there because it's 100% part of the story. The nudity. And Proximan, the comic we're releasing on Kickstarter on Thursday, has no nudity. So there's none in that. So it's kind of pretty. It's still pretty miserable. I'm not going to pretend it's nice, but it's not. It's not like the main story kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, Proximan seems like. So is it a continuation of this? Because I read the fourth issue, but this is Proximan 1. So is it a different take than what's happened in arc issues before? Or.
Yeah. So. It's technically a spin-off, because it's new characters.
Oh.
But their stories are connected. It's the same story.
Okay.
But basically, they get booted. This is a story about a family who get booted on a different planet.
Okay.
It's kind of told in the style. It's like it's a narration. The boy is called Odd, and he's been born. He was conceived naturally, like we were, from his mum. But his parents are technically Homo evolutus, because they were made by bacteria. So he's a human kid, and they are basically doing the same thing that Lilith and Joe are doing in the main story, which is that they're just, you know, they're evaluating, they're running, you know, creating their new world on Proxima B, which is our nearest potential exoplanet, and. They find a signal from Earth, and this is I will try. I won't go into it, because I think I'll probably make myself seem like a maniac. But basically, they get a signal from Earth, so that, and this is kind of half the reason they've come, is to kind of network planets together. And the signal contains information to boot a girl. There's no logs, there's no data, there's no video. It's basically just make this girl.
Oh,
and the mother called Anna May is like, I'm not doing that. This, you know, that we don't know what's in this, what this girl is. You know, she could be a drone. She could be a million other things. And the dad's a bit like, do it. You know, what could go wrong? And then they sort of decide that their son, Odd, should be first contact. He should be the kid that sort of ingratiates this girl into this planet. And as soon as she boots, she gets very sick. And then this thing starts to grow out of her eyes, which they think might be cancer. They can't really quite work it out. And then this, you know, I'm not going to try and spoil it, but then what's happening to this girl is something very similar that happens in Lilith and Joe's story. And then basically Odd and Lilith and Joe's story sort of become, you know, like a, you know, kind of composite story, where the things that happen in his story affect theirs and vice versa. So they kind of...
Oh, gotcha.
Because one of the weird things that happens is because... say this quickly, Rory, so you don't make everyone think you're nuts. Because directed panspermia involves, you know, sending light, but light takes time to travel. You know, we talk in light years. Now, Proxima B, the planet in, you know, in Arx Proxima is 4 light years away. So it takes 4 years for light to go from Earth to there.
Yeah.
And our main story, their planet is Tau Ceti E, which is another real planet, which is 11 light years away. So it takes 11 years for light to travel from here to there. So they start this kind of message in a bottle kind of communication where they can communicate with each other. But it takes lifetimes for the message to send and to be sent back. And then their narratives start to interweave. And then the easiest way to send messages is not just send a message, it's to send yourself. You basically compress yourself down and then they boot a copy of you on another planet and it all kind of gets a bit...
Yeah.
It's very strange. It's very strange because there's nothing out there like this. It's kind of time travel, it's kind of teleportation, it's kind of cloning. It's sort of everything mixed together. But it's all based on, you know, synthetic biology and, you know, just infrared signals and lasers and, you know, it's all kind of a bit high. So it's all a bit, hard to describe. I've tried to describe it in all of the stories and Proxima is kind of, sorry, I'm really going on now, but basically it's taken sections from the original story and I've sort of repurposed it into this story. So it's kind of,
Will you be going back to the original story? Because like the fourth issue kind of like left on a cliffhanger.
Oh yeah, no, it's already started.
Okay, great.
Five and the Kickstarter for that will be coming out early next year.
Oh, awesome. And Proxima just one issue, or is it going to be several, or is it a one shot?
Essentially, it's going to be four. It's going to be the one that we're releasing on Thursday is going to be a 40-page comic. So it's quite a big comic.
Yeah.
And every subsequent issue we release they'll come quicker.
Yeah.
And they'll be in 20-page installments. And I'll get it done as quickly. So we've got there's an American artist doing a guy called Eric Owen.
Okay.
Who's a DC artist. He does a lot of brand stuff for DC, but he's a phenomenal artist. And earlier this year, I was trying to find another artist, which is very difficult. And I was sort of packed it in and I sort of DM'd him sort of on a pun. I thought he's never going to say yes, but I'll just do it anyway. And then sort of towards the end of last year, he was like, I'd be interested. And I was like, what? So he's a... he started in late summer and July, so a couple of months ago, and he's done 5 pages, and he's incredible artist. So he's
great.
Smashing it. And the idea is he's going to be making that comic, and I'm going to be the UK artist. Andrew Morris is going to be doing. So I'll be doing 2 comics in tandem.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So we're sort of producing them simultaneously, but then doing Kickstarters intermittently for both of them.
Gotcha. One of the things I kind of wanted to ask you about too is one of the things I did when I was finished reading everything is I went back to the first book and I went through like everything because, at least to me, it seemed it's very dense, right? Like I was just trying to figure things out as I was like, and it is the type of thing that like immediately, as soon as I finished it, it was like, I wanted to go back and like, look again, like, did I miss anything? And it's interesting to me. I mean, you're a storyboard artist. How, like when I wasn't paying attention to the panels and stuff and walking through, like, I was just like, oh, wow, the story kind of was, I'm not going to say clearer, but obviously it's a second pass. You know what I mean? But I was just going through and I was like, okay, now that I've read everything and I'm going back and just looking at the visuals, like I kind of got what was happening in the opening so much more. Can you talk to me about, you know, just crafting the visuals for it? Like just like the story? I'm assuming that that's your first part, right? Because I mean, do you write out a script first and then, how does your work process go?
I do really detailed storyboards, a little bit too detailed probably because I spend a lot long on it, but I kind of really kind of tell the story in the storyboards and then I you know, just kind of just start, you know, just trying to knock pages out, sort of, you know, get the assets together and, you know, build it and massage it and then try and fail and then try and succeed sometimes. And yeah, so it's a slow, you know, it's a slow, I mean, I'm by no means like I'm a total novice because I've only been doing this for like 3-4 years.
Yeah. You mean so, as far as comics goes?
Yeah, it's comics. Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. I've been working in film and TV and, you know, the arts anyway. And I kind of came to film and TV from comics, you know, so.
Oh, gotcha.
So that's kind of my first love was, comics when I grew up. So, yeah, it's just as kind of slow going. The challenge of the book is that there's nothing there. You like normally in a story, you just try and avoid cliches.
Yeah.
And you try to write something interesting. With this story, I have to put cliches into it because it's so, there's no frame of reference for a lot of it. So yeah. I've tried to, it's quite a challenge from a writing point of view, because you kind of have to, I mean, obviously I use the Adam and Eve story and there's a few other bits in there, but like especially later on, I've sort of had to turn it a little bit more into a kind of traditional thriller because it's just hard to, because there isn't any, like when you read a comic or you watch a TV show, in your head, you're sitting there thinking, what kind of show is this? Is this a, you know, is this like a vampire story? Is this a, we're sitting there kind of, you know, seeing algebra and Fibonacci curves and we're like, oh, this is this kind of story or this is this kind of story, and we do it without thinking. And one of the challenges with doing arcs is that there hasn't really been a story in this style or with this concept before, so I have to kind of make it dumber a lot of the time.
Well, I think it's completely original. Yeah. I've never read anything like that. I mean, obviously other than Adam and Eve in the Bible, but this is a much more complicated like take on everything and just everything that they go through and everything that they do. I mean, it's so, and that's part of like what's great about it, right? It's because like none of it feels safe, right? None of it feels comfortable. Like, you know, they're pioneers, like in the literal, like in the most uncomfortable and horrifying way, right? And you know, that's one of the things, like I feel like when I was reading it, especially in the beginning, I was like, why is the guy's eyes like, what, why does it seem like something's coming out of his nose? Like, what's going on? Like, I don't, you know, it seems like they're, he's crying all the time and stuff like that. And then as you go on, it's like, oh, it's the environment. And oh, they're not perfectly suited. Oh, they think it's this and they think it's that. And so much of it is just like, you know, because usually in sci-fi, it's like beam down or whatever, or, you know, rocket down to the planet. And it's like, environment's fine or environment is harmful. Like, this is like, they get spawned. And then first thing is like, they don't have their personalities imprinted. Cause that's like one of the cool things is like, whatever, however many million light years away, like your essence is being transplanted into this. I'm just going to use the word clone, even though that may not be the correct, you know.
Yeah.
This
yeah,
sort they of like, are. Yeah, and you know that they sort of have to figure out like what environment they're, and then their essence kind of gets burned into them, and then it's like, oh crap, I'm on this planet, and that was one of the fascinating things too, is like, this is not the actual person. It's like, what's that painting where it's like, this is not a painting, where it's like the bowler cap, and I can't even remember the artist, and you know, this is not a painting, and it's like, oh, but it is, or this is not a hat, I can't remember, but it's like, oh, these are not the people. And just the more that gets revealed, the more that you're just like, mind is being blown. Like, you know, like I don't, so I just, I don't even know what I'm getting at, because I can't express like how completely original like this is. And just, it was just fascinating to me as I kept reading it. So like,
thank you. Like, I mean, I know that might sound like that's so nice to hear, but yes, like they, I originally, it was, you know, I did kind of toy with the idea that they would almost be like automated. They would almost be like biological robots. They wouldn't really have a personality. But I think you realize, well, in the process of writing it, I realized they had to have some kind of memory of where they were from. And then you realize that no, memory is sort of the point. They have to remember where they're from. They obviously know that there's no kind of science fiction conceit where they don't realize that they're not the same, the right people. They know that they're copies.
Yeah.
And, but then because one of them's been there longer, it started to play tricks on him because he feels like he's a different man to the person that was sent there, because the person that sent there was his primary was this idealistic, you know, kind of company man who loved the idea of colonizing other planets, whereas he's a guy who is literally, the rain is like blinding him and the oxygen is filling his lungs with water, and you know, it's like he's in the worst place ever.
Yeah.
It's kind of schizophrenia in him because he's like, fuck, pardon me.
No, that's fine.
Like, he's like, screw that guy, he's sending me to this absolute, you know, oven of a place, because the planet is basically an oven. I mean, it's kind of like slowly getting worse and worse. So it's
I mean, we don't want to spoil anything for anyone who has not read this, but I was just like, I mean, they start in the shit and it just gets worse as it goes up. Like, it's really good. That's one of the things, because this is such an original concept and because it's like so incredibly well thought through and stuff like that. How did you pitch this to artists or to people who were interested in it? Like, what was your, it's so funny because usually I'll start off a podcast and be like, what's your elevator pitch for this? But like, because it's so different, because I was so kind of enthusiastic about it, I just like started babbling about it. But like, how do you go to people and are like, yeah, so it's like, you know, again, I'm going to use the wrong terminology. It's like microgenesis, and they're being, you know, sent light years away, and then, you know, the seeds land on the planet and then they kind of grow, and then there's this thing and they have AI, and I'm just like, how do you distill this to sort of your average, you know, dumb viewer?
I don't know. Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
Greatest, you know, science popularizers ever.
Yeah.
He's got obviously just, you know, Demon Haunted World, and some of his books are just absolutely incredible. But he's got a line which is, he's got several, but one of the ones from this was, it will not be us that reach Alpha Centauri, it'll be a species very like us. And that was one of his lines. And I remember thinking, oh man, I want to read that book, you know, about that species of us. And it's basically been Carl Sagan. Just hit people with Carl Sagan quotes and they'll go, yeah, okay, that sounds cool. Yeah, well, I don't care. Yeah, sure. And Carl Sagan, there's millions of scientists, you know, von Neumann, who, you know, he kind of, you know, another great physicist involved in the Manhattan Project. He was this person who kind of came up with the idea of a von Neumann probe, which is kind of what the probe in our story is. It's kind of taken from von Neumann, and so it's just, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants and copying their homework basically, and just kind of, you know, reading what they've written and things they've said, and just trying to, you know, because whilst I'm not a scientist, I'm a visual person, so I can make it into visuals. That's really what I'm doing. I'm kind of just, you know, taking lots of incredible ideas and, you know, turning it into a visual thing that you can see. But it's also, you know, it's not like, you know, there's a lot of science fiction now where everything's getting a bit like Avatar, everything has to be huge, whereas this story is really just two people in the wood just having a really bad time. So
yeah,
it's
but
not...
there's an epic feel to it though at the same time. Like, I mean, I really, obviously I know what you're saying and stuff like that, but there is this epic feel of like the environment that you've created where it just seems so big and the concept seems so big that it's just like, oh, like it is a small story between two people and what they're experiencing. But for me, I was like, I just felt like, oh, this is huge. Like just the mind blowing ideas and everything in it, where I was just like, it doesn't feel like normal. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. It doesn't feel like normal sci-fi. It just feels like this is something different. And I feel like almost like a breakthrough in a way. And I just, like, I hope a lot of people check this out or have checked it out, because I mean, that's, you know, I just feel like it's so different. Cause I mean, again, it's like, I've been a fan of this. I have not read everything. I've not read all the Carl Sagan. I've not read all the, you know, but you know, I've loved sci-fi for a long time. And just to me, I was just like, oh, this makes no apologies. It is direct about what it's doing. It's not spoon feeding you something. You have to keep up with it. And just, you know, I mean, maybe there's other people out there that have come across these concepts and stuff, but I was like, oh, like, I mean, you know, microgenesis and all that. Yes. But I mean, just the way that you've, I mean, you have a freaking scientific thing at the end of the book that like explains everything, like that, which leads me to my next question. Did you have somebody checking your homework? Like, did you have somebody, like, did you have like scientists, or do you have friends, or like physicists? Yeah. Like, how did you go about that?
We've got one of my good friends is a scientist called Dr. Lucy Crompton, and she's a stem cell scientist.
Oh, okay.
She sort of like helped me edit the first like two or three books.
Yeah.
So she kind of, she checks it and so she kind of, because I didn't want to, because one of the things, I'm a little bit, you know, like any writer, I'm writing I'm writing a real science fiction. There's lots of science in this. There's not, it's like one of my, being a bit pedantic, I think a lot of science fiction now is not really science fiction. It's kind of just futuristic fantasy. There's it's just, oh, we're in the future and there's, you know, there's flying cars and there's robots and this is science fiction. Like, and I, you know, because I'm a bit of a pedantic person, I get like, that's, you know, this isn't, science fiction should be, you know, being a purist, I think it should have science in it. You know, I think it should be based and it should have things in there that you haven't heard and, you know, and haven't seen before. So I was kind of a bit insecure about it. I was like, I want this to feel like it's, so Lucy helped me edit it. And like I said, again, because a lot of the time the concepts and the ideas in it are kind of based on research by one scientist and another scientist. So it's kind of, just kind of, you know, layering, really. Just kind of taking, oh, you know, like Breakthrough Starshot, which is, you know, something that's been around for a while, and then combining that with synthetic biology and, you know, adding a pinch of this and a pinch of that, and then sort of just kind of bringing them together into one story. And weirdly, the other day, I saw this YouTube video by a scientist called Neri Oxman, and she's a MIT grad, and she has her own synthetic biology lab where now they're making things with silkworms and, you know, they're making life forms that can make stuff like in our story, like they get clothes and they get things made by bacteria. And I was like, oh, okay. So, and she was talking about stuff and it's all very contemporary, it's all brand new science, but a lot of the stuff that's in the story, because it was kind of inspired by her peers, it's kind of like, so I was like, oh, okay. So I was on sort of on the right track. Some of this stuff kind of tallies with some of the stuff that they're coming up with now. So not a scientist, just a visual artist, but I have scientists read it and check it and sanity check.
That's amazing. I mean, you've done a really great job. One of the things that, you know, and I know we're sort of approaching the hour mark, so I don't want to keep you too long, but one of the things that astounded me, especially reading the literature sort of at the end of the book, is like how much patience, like, I mean, we're talking about thousands of years, like, you know what I mean? Like possibly even a million years to like get to another star and then create life form and then just have faith that like, or even know, like, because that's part of the thing is like, we don't know what happened to Earth. We don't know like what went on. Like, we don't know, was there a tragedy or did they just decide like they were going to send, so that, but then by the time all these like micro spores or whatever get to the other planet, would it even matter what sent, like, you know, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, the Fermi paradox, which is, you know, why our skies aren't lit up with signals from other planets, is that most civilized, you know, the Fermi paradox, based on Alberto Fermi, who was, again, a Manhattan Project alum. He was like, most civilizations, when they get sufficiently advanced, would probably destroy themselves. So they know full well, the chances are that by the time they get to this planet, Earth's not going to be transmitting.
Yeah.
But the hope is that they are. And then if they are, the idea being, and in the context of the story, is they become like lighthouses to each other. So they can then, at the speed of light, send a signal back to Earth, and Earth can send a signal back to them, and then you can network planets together. So in the time scales, 10,000 years in our story. That's a long time, human, you know, from a, you know, from the species point of view, but from the on the cosmological scale, it's barely a second. So
yeah,
the idea is that they're sort of taking like this kind of, we're pollinating the universe, we're not and then the idea being in the story is that this is you're seeing at the point in the story when they start to communicate with each other, and they're starting to, this network is starting to emerge, and you know, in Proximum, the Kickstarter that's coming out Thursday, they find a signal from Earth, and the Earth, and the signal is boot this girl. So, and it's not quite what they expected, and then this is really the raison d'etre of the story, is this signal from Earth, and then them dealing with it. And ARCS, the actual story that we've been talking about, is kind of the prologue of that story. It's kind of the beginning, and then the Proximum is sort of the, you know, the main part of the story.
Well, I mean, I'm just going to say, if people have not figured it out, my mind was blown. I love this. I was like, this is the most original, like, thing I've read in a long time. Like, I can't remember when I've come across something like this, and I just loved it. And so, I mean, congratulations on a great book, and everyone should go check out ARCS. That's ARCS with a K, not a C, Proximan. Hopefully this podcast will probably be up Thursday. So the day of launch, so stop listening to this and go to Kickstarter and check out ARCS Proximate, because I mean, I honestly, I'm looking forward to it. I will be throwing, you know, money at it, as, you know, as much as I can. And, you know, just, I love what I got sent for this. Like, I just, that's part of the reason I do this podcast. It's like, just discovering new things and just discovering new people. And then when it's like this, it's like, mwah, it's like chef's kiss. It's just like really great.
This is the nicest podcast. I mean, I've done every podcast. This is my third podcast. You've been great. So it's been so nice.
I appreciate that. Where can people find you online? You have a website. What is it? Clicky Sprout Wife? Where does that come from?
Yeah, that's my wife, basically. It's named after my wife. So it's not her name. Her name's Holly, but it's a nickname. So it's www.clickysproutwife.com. If you go there, you can find links to the Kickstarter, which is going out on Thursday.
Yeah.
And
That's awesome. Yeah,
we're just trying to make something. Trying to make something real.
And are you on the socials, or like,
at Clicky Sprout Wife on Twitter and Instagram, I think.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, cool. Well, thank you so much for your time. You know, and I appreciate, you know, having been sent this from Melissa and, you know, your PR agent. I love this stuff. Like, what's that?
She's the best.
She is the best. She is the best.
She, like, we haven't really, you know, this is the first time we've worked with her, but she's just been amazing. So
yeah. Don't hide PR.
PR. Best.
Yeah, I will say it. I will say it online. I appreciate her. I appreciate you. I appreciate ARCS. I love you. I love what you've done. You're welcome back anytime. It is Rory James Collins, right?
Rory James Collins. Yes.
Gotcha. RJ Collins.
Christian Horner.
Christian Horn.
Horn, sorry.
Yeah, Christian Horn. This is the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. Again, check out ARCS Proximan. This should be up on the day of launch.
Great.
So, you know, check it out. I mean, and so will the original ARCS miniseries be available as part of that Kickstarter? Okay, awesome.
The ARCS one will be available, the new comic Proximan, and then the fourth part, which is the latest installment, which we did a Kickstarter for last year. You'd be able to pick that up as well.
Awesome. Yes. Go to Kickstarter, search ARCS with a K, Proximan. This, you know, what I've read so far is amazing. Can't wait to check out the new series. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Again, Rory Collins. ARCS Proximan. My name is Christian Horn. This has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You could check us out on parttimefanboy.com. We are on Instagram. We are on Facebook. We have abandoned the hellscape that is X or Twitter. I call it Twix. now. And our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Please go support Arx Proxmon on Kickstarter. I'm telling you, this is the most original, crazy thing. Like, I really enjoyed it. So please go check it out. Kickstarter, Arx Proxmon, Part-Time Fanboy. Thank you for listening. We will be back soon with another episode. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Time.